it just keeps getting better and better and better. Well, apart from a couple of injuries. Reading were 2-1 victors in Cardiff yesterday afternoon, making it 3 wins from 3 in the Championship to ensure we remain top of the league. It is a pleasure to be talking about it here on the Tyler Stem podcast, episode number 235. My name is Ollie Allen, stepping in to guest host for Mark this week. And I'm delighted to say that I am joined, firstly, by editor of the Tyler Stem, Simeon Pickup. How's it going, Sim?
I'm absolutely buzzing. Feels a bit like we're in a dream at the minute. I'm going to wake up in a minute. Reading having lost the first 3 of the season rather than win, but let's just enjoy it for the time being while it lasts.
And also joining me this morning is the man who writes our brilliant View from Dolan column on the website. It's Ben Thomas. How's it going, Ben?
Very well indeed, on cloud 9 at the moment. So I'm getting used to waking up on Sunday and seeing us top of the league. So long may that continue at the moment, Ollie.
Yeah, it's a beautiful sight at the moment. Every time the official Skybet Championship Twitter account tweets out the league table, it's a wonderful sight just to see Reading at the top. And I think someone said on BBC Radio Berkshire yesterday that it's just great just to see Reading, you know, up there. Just great to see Reading sort of in the news, being talked about. You know, we're getting, you know, decent time on the Quest highlight show every week. The non-league paper did a front page story about the club today as well. So it's just fantastic that we are up there, and long may it continue, as you say. Before we go any further, as ever, a huge shout out and thank you to our podcast sponsors, ZCZ Films, who continue to support what we do here on the Tyler Stend. So if you do like your art, or even if you don't like your art, do go and check out ZCZ Films. A huge thank you as well to those of you who continue to donate to our Patreon page. It really does help us out with what we do here at the Tyler Stend. So if you would like to add to our virtual tip jar, just visit patreon.com/thetylerstend and pick a pledge that suits you. Right then, let's get into the recap for Cardiff City 1, Reading 2.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
As I said in that intro there, 3 wins from 3. The first time we've done that since 1985, which tells you just how good the start to the season is. I think we won 13 games in a row in that 1985-86 season, so we can replicate that again, then that would be fantastic. But I just wanted to start, both of you, I mentioned it briefly there, but just how good does it feel? I mean, we don't know how long this sort of feeling is going to last, but, you know, we've not been top of the league for so long before this season. You know, we've sat through some utter dross, really, in the last few years, and really even sort of in that season under Yap Stam, we got to the playoff final. It wasn't that entertaining to watch, but having, you know, gone through what we've gone through the last few years, Sim, how good does it feel? I mean, we obviously, you know, won on the opening day, and we thought that's a great start to the season. Won last weekend, all right, you know, they had 2 players sent off, but we've come up against a Cardiff side who sort of reached the playoffs last season, beat them on their own patch, 3 wins from 3. You know, how long can this last, Sim?
I don't know, to be honest, but as you say, just enjoy it while it lasts. And think about the last couple of seasons, is that we've had some times where we've not necessarily been terrible, but things have just gone against us. We've got a bad bit of luck, or maybe we just slightly haven't been at our best on one day, and it's just not clicked. But it's just great to see it all come together and everything seems perfect, and take out the injuries on Saturday and the goal conceded, and you couldn't have had a much better start to the season. We're solid at the back, we're great going forwards, and it's just great to enjoy, and it really gives a massive boost at the start of the season that really gives us a chance for the rest of the campaign.
And we weren't particularly dominant in the game. We sort of were, you know, in control, but clinical, really. We only had 6 shots in the entire game to Cardiff's 12. The XG had us down. Cardiff 1.3 on the XG, Reading 0.6. And I can't sort of really remember too many sort of clear-cut chances apart from the 2 goals that we'll go on to speak about in a minute. But is that what we've been missing sort of the last couple of years? You know, we've so often sort of rude, you know, not taking our chances. And it's almost as if we're going back to that playoff final campaign all over again, where Reading were, you know, not necessarily, you know, had a host of chances, but put them away when they needed to. And it certainly seems as though, you know, in front of goal at the moment, you know, we sort of, everything we touch sort of tends to go in.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my point of view, it's the biggest change really has been the work right off the ball. I think, you know, the kind of the compact nature of the way the side are playing, and I know we'll talk about more about the formation and the players we've got currently later on, but, you know, the thing I was most impressed with was the way that when we lost the ball, we didn't just stand there and look at it. You know, you take Richards, for example, there was a couple of times where he was going forward, got dispossessed. He was straight back in there winning the ball back. And when you've got players that are able to do that, it makes everyone else's job so much easier. You know, there's a massive amount of composure in that side at the moment for players that are, you know, relatively young and inexperienced, you know, a lot of them. So people just seem to be stepping up and doing their jobs. And I think previous seasons, that's not been the case, you know. I've got some theories on that I'll talk about later on, but it was genuinely a delight to watch. And I never really felt like, you know, I agree with Sim, we weren't dominant by any stretch, but, you know, we never looked like losing the game. And that's been the case all the way through this season already, you know. So it's really, really pleasing at the moment. And I'm kind of just buzzing for the next game, which is a rarity as a Reading fan in the last few years. So yeah, long may it continue, really.
Let's talk about the goals then. The first one, another set-piece goal, I think just a minute after half-time, so it was 0-0 at half-time, and then they come out for the second half. Michael Olise whips in a fantastic free kick, which Michael Morrison gets on the end of. That's four set-piece goals Reading have scored in the Championship this season, which is the most in the division. Incidentally, Cardiff are second on that list with three. They obviously scored from a corner at the weekend, Lee Tomlin bundling the ball home. But again, yeah, another assist from Michael Olise, up to three, I think, for him now this season. Do you think this is something that the Panovich might have worked on in training, Sim? Because I don't know whether it's just sort of something that sort of spreads around social media, but we never, you know, sort of really seem to have scored that many goals from set pieces in recent years. But this season, you know, we're averaging sort of pretty much one a game at the moment. As I say, Michael Morrison, you know, we know what a threat he can be from set pieces. I think he scored six for Birmingham in the season before he joined us. I think he got one or two last season, Huddersfield and Luton, off the top of my head, I can remember. But fantastic header from him yesterday, and certainly a warning to Lewis Gibson if he wanted to break into the side, that Michael Morrison still very much wants to keep his place. But Sim, do you think this is something that Panovich might have worked on in training? Because we're certainly sort of seeing Reading have much more of a threat from set pieces this season.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever know for sure, because it's one of those things that a manager doesn't really want to talk about openly. They don't want to kind of give away any clues to the opposition in advance. But we can safely say that he takes it seriously in training, and he is working on it in some way. And it really gives us a chance. And as we've said earlier in the podcast, Reading weren't necessarily dominant, and there are going to be other games where we're not dominant. But if you do have that set piece threat, you're always going to have a chance. And you think about over the last couple of years where we've not necessarily been the worst team, but we've conceded an avoidable goal from a set piece. And to be on the other side of that coin now, where we are capable of scoring goals from set pieces, it just gives you that extra boost and that extra edge, and really could be a valuable tool for us this season.
Yeah, it's always great, you know, when you get a last minute call that you think you might be able to get something out of it. Because I can remember countless games over the last couple of years where sort of Reading win a corner in the 89th, 90th minute, and you think, well, probably nothing's going to really happen out of this. But certainly this season with Michael Olise putting those balls into the box, and, you know, again, shout out to Olise again. I mean, we're saying it every week at the moment, but what a season he's having. It's still just 18 years old, as I say, his third assist of the season. And a real sort of breakthrough campaign for him. Obviously, came into the side second half of last season and played really, really well. But he's cemented himself as a key asset to this side now. He's missed just six league games in 2020, I believe. So, and I'll say it again, you know, still 18 years old, which is a fantastic achievement for him. You know, not many other players his age are sort of playing in the Championship as regularly as he is. Obviously, Jude Bellingham last season was an exception and has gone to Dortmund, but hopefully Reading won't get any ideas of sort of retiring the number seven shirt or shipping Olise off to Germany. But The other goal scorer, of course, Lucas Joao, once again showing his class. Fantastic hold-up play. Curtis Nelson certainly won't want to see that goal again, because Lucas Joao absolutely bullied him to sort of create space for himself and put the ball in the back of the net. He did go off injured later in the game with a shoulder problem, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But focusing on the positives for now, Ben, what a wonderful man Lucas Joao is.
I mean, he's really started this season the way he probably wanted to end last year, really, before he got injured. I think his scoring rate is phenomenal when you consider the amount of minutes he's actually had on the pitch for us and the goals that he scored, but also the kind of contribution away from scoring goals. I read an interview years ago with an Italian manager, and it was in English. I didn't translate it because I can't speak Italian, but he said that the best strikers that he's ever worked with are those that don't score that many goals. And I thought that was such a bizarre thing to say at the time. And the more I watch Joao, I kind of understand that, because his play off the ball and the way that he brings other people into the game is absolutely phenomenal. Top that off with the goals that he does score as well. For me, he is one of the most complete players that we've had for a long time at the club, and something that we've been crying out for, you know. So the thing now, obviously, he's injured, and I know you said we'll talk about it later on, but it's going to be very interesting to see how we adapt, whether or not we change the system, whether or not we play two up front as opposed to one. But, you know, his contribution yesterday was phenomenal, and those Cardiff defenders really knew that they were in a game, because he just hassled them all the time, didn't give them a minute. And you go back to last week when he kind of threw his toys out the pram for being substituted. I have no issue with that with a player in form, because he just wants to be there all the time. He just wants to score. He wants to be the man. And it's fantastic to see, really. You know, it really is. And the players clearly enjoy playing with him as well. So, you know, his kind of joy at other people scoring as well is a really good thing to see from a team ethic point of view. So, yeah, let's hope the injury is not as bad as it looked to be at the time, really.
Yeah, I mean, we saw last season, you know, the impact that no Lucas Joao can have on the side, and sort of him coming back into the team this season has really highlighted, you know, what an important player he is. I think Will wrote in his match report for yesterday's game that sort of no player has had an individual impact on a Reading side as much as Lucas Joao since Jason Roberts, and that's certainly high praise indeed. Of course, Lou Tomlin, as I say, did pull one back for Reading late on in the game, but even at 2-1 down, I think, Ben, you mentioned it earlier, that I didn't feel as nervous as perhaps I should have done at 2-1 down, because we seemed quite confident, we seemed quite organised. George Puskas came on, Tom Holmes came on, and Tom McIntyre came on, and sort of all played their part in sort of seeing that game out for Reading. Sort of, I think Puskas, you know, despite his faults, you know, came on and sort of did the perfect job yesterday, really. Sort of came on, you know, won a couple of niggly fouls. Tom Holmes made a couple of really good clearances. Bit of time wasting for the both of them, which I don't really mind at all, certainly if you're 2-1 down. And it's games, Sim, that perhaps in the past we might not have seen out, because Cardiff do have a threat. You know, they brought on Robert Glatzel, they brought on Josh Murphy, I think it was, or Jacob Murphy, one of the Murphy twins, and sort of went for it. But Reading seemed quite calm, composed. You know, we've already talked about this season about how organised that back four is, with Michael Morrison and Liam Moore in the centre of defence. And Reading saw the game out in a manner that we've not really seen them do before.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it went back to 2-1, I was kind of having flashbacks of that 2-2 draw a couple of years ago. You know, the one where Reading were, I think, 2-0 up at half time and then threw it away in the last 10 minutes against a Neil Warnock side. And
changed the course of the season, really, that game.
Exactly, yeah. And I was just thinking, oh God, here we go again. Lee Tomlin scored and it's got the writing on the wall for the exact same kind of result. But this side just has a maturity to it. Not just a maturity, but a spirit, a real collective spirit as well. And Paolo talks about a kind of a warrior spirit, which seems a bit cliche and a bit over the top to me. But if you do instill that, and if you do kind of really have that shining through in the last portion of a game, you are going to be able to see it out. And it's really encouraging to already see that. And I know Cardiff were kind of trying to throw the kitchen sink at us, but I can't remember too many obviously clear-cut chances. They didn't have any kind of real howlers that they missed or anything like that. And it's a massive testament to the spirit, to the organisation at the back, to the system as well, because we've got a good back four system that we're going, but also the way Laurent and Rinnemhota protect the back four, it's a very solid system in terms of protecting the defence, and I can see us nicking more games like this, 1-0, 2-1, whatever it is, for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that spirit and determination can really form the basis of a very, very good side. And I think Panovic has spoken about it in pretty much every interview he's done since coming to Reading, is that he wants to create that team unity, that team spirit. I think Michael Morrison mentioned it in his post-match interview yesterday as well, that they're sort of limiting the time that players are spending on their phones, so they can spend time with each other more and sort of create that team spirit. One player I did want to mention before we move on to the not so good news about injuries was Raphael, and someone who's perhaps not got as much credit as he deserves this season, and that's probably down to the fact that we've come to expect such good performances from him. Obviously, Player of the Year last season, but two clean sheets before yesterday. A bit unlucky with the goal yesterday. Obviously, made the initial save, but then couldn't quite get to Lee Tomlin's rebound, but made a fantastic, great reaction stop with his legs as Michael Morrison sort of deflected a Leandro Bacuna shot goalwards. But Ben, how important is Raphael to this team? Because, as I say, I think he almost goes a little bit unnoticed, because we have come to expect such good performances from him. But I think to go up in this league, you need a very, very good goalkeeper and sort of to build from the back. And certainly Raphael has proven time and time again last season, and he started the season in excellent form, just what a good goalkeeper he is.
Yeah, I think you're quite right in the fact that the reason we haven't noticed him really is because he just does his job. And I think we're starting to get to a point with the team now where we don't notice those players. It's something straight off the top of my head about Rinnemhota. You don't notice he's playing because he just does his job. And I think from Raphael's point of view, he's been crying out for a bit of a settled sort of back four, so the players that he can trust, and he's started to get that. Certainly his relationship that he's developed with Morrison, at the end of last year and obviously into this year as well, has been very positive for both of those players. But he, we've had great goalkeepers before, but they've lacked sort of key elements in their game. So you think about Federici and his distribution, it was awful. Whereas with Raphael, you've got the shot stopper, the distribution, the communication, the organisation, you've got everything there. And he will go on to be certainly a Premier League goalkeeper, hopefully with us, you never know. But he deserves to play at the top level. But the other thing about it as well is that he seems happy to be in that team at the moment. He's very complimentary on social media about the players that he's got in front of him. He's always talking about the team ethic, and that, again, having characters like that in the dressing room, you think back to sort of the Hanneman era where he was loved by the club and the players and the fans as well. So Raphael is kind of very much getting to that mould. And I just hope that we can, without being pessimistic, that we can keep him for the season, at the club, but also that he doesn't have any injuries that crop up, because he has been, very consistent model for us across the last sort of season and a half, really. So very, very pleased with what he's been able to bring to the club since he joined. Yeah, definitely.
Well, you mentioned injuries there, and that takes me nicely on to the next section of the recap. Because it was a pretty terrible game for injuries, really starting with John Swift, who wasn't in the squad at all. Nothing official from the club, as Tim Deller would say. That's not been confirmed yet, but according to Jonathan Lowe, he's expected to be out for 3 months. Swift, that is not Jonathan Lowe. We've got a couple of questions sort of about Swift and about the injuries in the mailbag. So we'll save sort of how to replace them for that sim, but sort of how big an absence is John Swift going to be for this side? Because for me, he's not actually started a season in that great form. I think he might have got fives in both of the player ratings in the league game so far, and sort of it's been sort of down more to, well, specifically Michael Olise, but Obi Ajari a little bit more as well. So he got the goal against Derby. But Swift's sort of taken a little bit of a back seat in the last couple of weeks. But obviously, there's absolutely no doubting how creative John Swift can be, and certainly on his day, he's one of the best players in the division. But how big a miss, for 3 months? I mean, it's not just a couple of games. It's until the end of the calendar year. How big a miss might John Swift be for this side, Sim?
I think it'd be a big miss, to be honest. I know he's not started the season too well, and I think the Derby game is the good example where he had a couple of good chances that he probably should have scored both of them, to be honest, but didn't get it. And that's the mark of a guy who's not starting the season well. But later on in that game, I think this is a good kind of way to sum up his impact on the team. We took him off, and our ability to keep the ball higher up the pitch and use it well and just keep it composed and keep it calm just went down a lot as soon as we took him off. And we don't have too many other players like that in the team. I know Elise is kind of similar in that he's a ball player who can pass in the final third well, but Swift just adds that class on the ball, the ability to keep it and use it intelligently. We do have other creative players like Ajari, and Mate adds kind of a different dimension to it. But in terms of that specific intelligent quality use of the ball, we don't have too many other players like that. And that is going to, I think, probably going to come back to haunt us quite a bit, actually.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about squad depth a little bit. Just mentioning those three other injuries. Obviously, all three substitutions that Reading made yesterday were forced substitutions because of injury. As I say, Lucas Shaw went off late on with a shoulder problem, and Felipe Araduna as well went off. Those two are slightly more serious. Yaki Mate also went off, but that seems to have just been just cramp. As I say, Lucas Shaw and Araduna perhaps a bit more serious, which is a slight worry, especially Shaw, but I suppose Araduna as well, because it leaves us with no sort of fit natural right backs. And Tom Holmes can play there, Rinomota can play there. But it certainly highlights, Ben, sort of that need to improve the squad depth. As I say, we've got a few questions on the mailbag in this, but sort of how does the injuries yesterday and before, obviously, Yeardom's out as well. But certainly, you look beyond that sort of starting 11, and it does highlight, quite starkly sort of how important reinforcements are needed in the sort of last week of the window.
I mean, it does, yeah. I mean, we're always looking a bit short anyway. I think in terms of the right-back situation, me personally, I would give Tom Holmes, a week in training and say, look, more than likely you're going to start on Saturday against Watford in that role. I probably wouldn't move Rinomota out of his current position because I don't like, upsetting the balance of the team in terms of players that have been playing well there.
Yeah,
I feel like certainly with the striker situation, that is something that is troubling me. I wouldn't, if Mate is fit, I would leave him in that kind of that front three, and then try and get someone else in, or hope by some miracle that Jao is fit, which is obviously incredibly unlikely to play against Watford. I just feel that, and I said this last time I was on the podcast, that our striker options are not good, really. I know, obviously, the less that's said about Mark McNulty at the moment, the better. I don't really see Baldock featuring, and I would expect him to go out on loan, if not permanent, this week. Puskas is a player that I rate highly, but he's not the player that you're going to play sort of 4-2-3-1 with. So Jao is, for me, the biggest loss of that, and I'm sure other Reading fans would agree. But, it does highlight the need to maybe try and get a little bit more experience in just for the short term for the next couple of months. In terms of Swift, I think you can look at it from two ways. Obviously, from a playing point of view, we need our best players in and around the squad. But from a financial point of view, the club might have been thinking that they might be able to shift him this week for 4 or 5 million, and that's not going to be the case now. It's a double blow, really, with Swift. That said, I don't think it massively upset the balance of the team yesterday. I think they coped very, very well with it in terms of the, Mate coming in and playing that role, really. So, yeah, it does highlight it, but I think the club would have been aware of that regardless of the injuries, just to have that kind of bulk around. And what's let us down in the past is that players coming in to do a job have not been very good at all. So we need to desperately improve that over the next sort of, 5 or 6 days, really.
Yeah, I mean, I just keep on going back to that League Cup game against Luton, where pretty much the second string side was put out, and really it was quite underwhelming and quite uninspiring. Obviously we have brought Lewis Gibson in the last couple of days, but that doesn't really fill a hole that we needed to fill. Rodrigo Riquelme still potentially coming, bit of a hold up on that one, but as I say, just over a week to go until the window shuts, and certainly reinforcements needed. But we will talk about that more. Plenty of questions on sort of how to replace the injured players in the mailbag. First of all, though, let's hear what Veljko Panovic thought of yesterday's victory?
Yeah, very happy. Very happy with the performance of the guys. I think that the spirit we have in the team and playing, knowing always what tools we have to use in a game to win or to confront our opponents, it's a really, really a great pleasure to work with the guys with those talents. So on the other side, unfortunately, this was a very costly 3 points, and we have still to determine the injuries we had in this game from João and from Felipe Araruna, but definitely it's something that happens in the game and something that we always have to deal with. So on the other side, very happy again, but still keep the feet on the ground, keep the spirit well, keep working and look for the next game.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right then, mailbag time then, as I say, one reoccurring theme on a lot of the questions we got yesterday, and that is on the injured players. Jack Simmons says, I want to enjoy today, but the injuries only make me worried it cannot carry on. Another first team player gone, and we could be in real trouble if we don't bring some cover in. Bisc Analytics says, thoughts on Swift being out? Is this now Elise season in the centre, or does Ajaria take that role moving forwards? Jack Roberts says, how do we replace Zhao if out long-term? Yaku Mate or new striker, who then replaces Yak on the wing if he goes? A question from William Reed as well. Slightly worried about the injury to Lucas Zhao, as I feel he's irreplaceable in this team at the moment, and that is a player we would have really needed against Watford. And finally, Becky Trotman says, who plays right back against Watford? So plenty of thoughts there and questions on what to do with the injured players. But there are, Sim, well, I'll go to both of you this actually, but Sim first, but I wanted to get your thoughts on sort of how to fill those gaps, I suppose, on that side. So first of all, the Swift gap, then the Zhao gap, and then the right back gap. Sim, if you were Veljko Paunović, how would you sort that team out for Watford?
I guess just keep it as simple as you can, basically. As Ben said earlier, with not wanting to move players out of their best position, you wouldn't want to put Rinomoto out at right back, for example, to upset that midfield dynamic. Straight swap up top for me, just bring Puskas in for Zhao. Keep that same three that we had yesterday with Ajari, release and Mate, and then put Holmes in at right back, assuming we've not brought in anyone else this week. As to that point about Ajari and Elise earlier, I think what we saw yesterday was that they will swap between going out on the left and going centrally, and it does give Reading a bit more kind of ability to change up their attack play to make themselves a little bit harder to predict from your position's point of view. And I know both can play kind of in both positions, and that does give us that extra element, basically. So I'd be looking to make the most of it.
Ben, how about for you? Do you think reinforcements are needed, or do you think Paunović might sort of, you know, move some players around as it is?
Well, I think the positive is the injuries. We're not going to sell anyone now, so that's, you know, we're going to keep the squad together largely. I think before maybe you might have looked at maybe someone like Puskas getting a bit fed up with being a bit part player and so on. But yeah, I think he comes in for, well, I would say that he comes in for Zhao 100% unless someone else comes through the door. My only worry, as I said previously, is that he is not going to be your player that's going to hold up particularly well. So the front three, which I would leave the same, are going to have to get a lot closer to him. Ajaria or Elise, whoever's in the middle there, as Sim said, is interchangeable. And they have to get a lot closer to Puskas to give him that support. I think really the side at the moment does pick itself. As I said, I think right back would go to Holmes because he's got a week now to get his head around that. And, you know, Watford, certainly in attacking sense, are going to be a different kettle of fish to Cardiff. You know, they're going to get the ball down. They've got quicker players than Cardiff, in my opinion, and they're really going to push him on. So it's whether or not people like Renamota sort of comes across to protect him a little bit more. You don't know, but I don't want players being pulled out of position for the sake of it, because, you know, these potentially could be long-term issues that we've got, and we've got to adapt to fit that system that he wants to play. And that, again, is a problem that we've not had, or we've had in previous years, where there's just been too much change, pulling players out of position, you know, bizarre things that have been going on all the way through from sort of, you know, Stam all the way up to Bowen, really. So keep the side as balanced as it can be. You know, if they get players in this week, great. I would imagine they won't be ready to play Saturday regardless, depending on the timescale. So, yeah, you would expect that the changes would be for Jao and Puskas, and then obviously Aruna and Hums, and that would be it, unless something incredible happens. You know, keep the three the same and then go from there, really.
Well, Panovic played Bastian Schweinsteiger at centre-back when he was at Chicago Fire, so hopefully there's no sort of square pegs in round holes at Reading situation. I tweeted it on Saturday, actually, but, you know, in Andy Yeardom, John Swift and Lucas Zhao, you know, Reading have three of, you know, sort of the best players in their sort of respective positions in the championship, really, when they're fit. But the problem with all three of those players is that they're just ridiculously injury prone. You know, all three were out injured for a portion of last season. Swift has been injured pretty much every season he's been at Reading, and they're all once again out this season. And, you know, look, I don't want to put any blame on the players themselves or on the club's medical staff, but it's a bit of a pain, you know, when, you know, you can't really rely on these players, you know, not necessarily for the whole season, but you want them for a good chunk of it. You know, if we're not going to see Swift until the new year, Yeardom and Zhao, again, we don't know, you know, officially how long they're out for, but I don't think it's just going to be a couple of weeks. It might be a month or so. It's really, really tough because these are talented players, but they're just so injury prone. And that's the frustrating thing. I have to say, the rumour of Perry and G from Crewe would be very much appreciated right now. You know, very, very highly rated. Got them promotion from League Two last season, and certainly would be a good addition to fill that right back spot. A couple of questions on just the amazement of what's happened over the last couple of weeks. The exiled Robin, Bristol City fan, said, "What's changed with you? How come you're looking so good this season?" Evan Collins moved it over sort of to the manager chat, saying, given it's largely the same squad last season, what has Paolo done that Bowen hasn't? And we'll read again with another question. What do you think this form can be attributed to? Slightly different tactics, morale, or is it simply a new manager bounce? And will all this positivity soon come crashing down? Are there any signs or any way of knowing when the form can be attributed to? Or will we only know from hindsight? Sim, how much credit can Paolo take from this, and how much credit are we giving Mark Bowen for this? Because as Evan says, it is pretty much the same squad as last season, the only additions being Josh Laurent and Lewis Gibson, who's not even played yet. It is the same sort of set of players. How much credit, Sim, are you giving Paolo compared to Bowen?
It's a very similar set of players, but it's also a very much a smaller group of players. And in previous years, we've looked at a really bloated, over-the-top squad with a lot of players kind of not really being able to play much of a part. Last season, you think about the number of decent players we were leaving out each week. But being able to cut that back and reduce the size of the squad and have a much leaner group makes it a much more focused group and a lot more motivated, a lot more driven, I would say. And yes, it is a similar group, but having a different dynamic in that group really helps. And to be honest, the performances that we've seen in the last few weeks, not amazing, but good enough to win relatively comfortably in each case. They're performances that we know this team is capable of, and it's been capable of all of last season and in previous years before that as well. So credit to Paolo for getting that, but he's been put in a good position by the lean nature of the squad. And hopefully if we do get in more additions, which are obviously badly needed, they're not ones that upset that dynamic, that upset that kind of that lean focused nature. We can't afford to go over the top with signings, basically, because it could spoil a really good thing that we've got going at the minute.
What's changed for you, Ben? Because, you know, look, I'll hold my hands up, and I thought, well, I said it on this podcast, you know, 3 weeks ago, that it was, you know, the absolute nightmare preparation for the new season, a new manager going, 2 weeks before the start of the campaign, not really any new signings. It sounded like chaos. I think I predicted on the season preview podcast that we might not even win any of our first five games, which looks a bit stupid now because we've won 3 from 3. But, you know, Panovic has done the perfect job so far, really. What's he done for you, Ben, that sort of makes this team so good at the moment?
I think the biggest thing really is you know, I'm going to go one step further than Sim, because my frustration with the club over the last few years is that we've had good players, you know, and it's been very difficult to accept the absolute dross that we've had to put up with as fans. And it has been. It's been awful to watch at times. Turgid, you know, petulant football that we've played over the years. And now you're in a situation where you've all the experienced players pretty much are in the side. So that is always going to make for a happier dressing room, because the younger players see that and they're kind of, those experienced players are taking them along. Last year, and I'm not casting aspersions on players, because, you know, none of us are in the dressing room. We don't know. But when you've got people like, you know, Gunter, Adam, McCleary to some extent, you know, Blackett was at the side, they've all, for the exception of Blackett, I guess, played international football. They're not going to be happy sitting on the bench at a championship club. And I think what we got towards the end of last year with Bulldog was, you know, his comments about the board and the club was a little bit of a taste of that. You know, Moore was obviously out the side as well, for whatever reason. So he's not going to be happy with that. You know, yeah, these players are playing a lot of money, but they want to be playing. There's a lot of pride there. And I think one of the things that Bowen did, was obviously realise that and go, we've got to get rid of these players. And they've done that. You know, it was a perfect storm of, like, actually, they're at the end of their contracts, we can save some money here, let's get rid of them. But also what he's been able to do, you know, from Pauno's point of view is bring those younger players in. Now, the rumour is that he's been working with those under-18s upwards and he's been bringing those into the first team. That's fantastic, because, you know, anytime you bring younger players into a settled side, they're going to learn more and they're going to be more confident. And, you know, we look at Holmes yesterday and what did he play? 15, 20 minutes? And he was just phenomenal, because he was time-wasting. He was playing the game. There was no sense of any anxiety him playing at all. If he'd have chucked him in the team last year, we probably wouldn't have seen him again for another couple of months, because it would have been a disaster. You know, Araruna coming in, he's not a right back, but, you know, I think you said at the top of the podcast, Ollie, he's been all right. You know, he's been really good. Yesterday, he was fine. You know, sort of 6 or 7 on the ratings chart, which is great. That's what you need. So I think the biggest thing really has been looking at the balance of the experience and getting that as the spine of the team and then bringing those younger players in. You know, you talk about Loren, and he wanted to join the club. That's what we want at Reading Football Club. You want players to come in and say, yeah, this is a club I want to join, and do it regardless. I think the other thing really is that he said, actually, when we're off the ball, just get it back. Don't stop. Pressure them all the time. And Richards, as I said earlier, is a classic example of that. So I think for me, they've been the two changes, really. And we're starting to see what good players these guys can be. Whether or not they're going to be able to continue to do that with the injuries, I don't know. I think they will, because I think, you know, winning games is a very difficult habit to lose. And they won't want to come off the top now. So there's going to be confidence there. There's going to be pride. There's going to be kind of excitement at playing games, as opposed to maybe last year, you know, quite a lot of negativity around the squad and the team as a whole. So I think for me, definitely they're the two biggest changes. Yeah.
Well, talking about characters in the dressing room, SDS says, who would you rather spend a lazy Sunday afternoon with, Liam Moore or Michael Morrison? I'll ask you both for your answer on this, but, you know, they're both clearly very fine gentlemen. And Reading certainly seem to have a habit of sort of bringing in, you know, great characters first and foremost. You know, I know this is a bit of a jokey question, but it does sort of lend to the suggestion that, you know, we've seen in the signing interviews of both Josh Lauren and Lewis Gibson, they both seem really, really great guys, first and foremost. And Reading certainly seems to, whilst perhaps not bringing the nicest, best players on the pitch, sorry, they certainly seem to bringing nice guys. And, you know, Dave Edwards for me springs out as that, as, you know, was probably not, you know, quite good enough to play in the championship when he came to Reading, but, you know, the nicest guy possible off the pitch. Sim, Liam Moore or Michael Morrison for this afternoon for you?
Michael Morrison just seems like a really sound bloke, to be honest. And you can tell it in his post-match interview yesterday. He seems like a really nice, honest, pleasant bloke to be around and to talk to, and really good character to have at the club. Just on Dave Edwards, I did meet him very briefly once. I think it was after the 3-0 loss at Sheffield Wednesday a couple of years ago, and he was a really nice bloke. So credit to him.
Ben?
This is like a proper Alan Partridge question, isn't it? So difficult, though. I mean, you know, they've both got qualities. I think how I like to spend my Sundays, it would be Morrison, 100%. He just looks so chilled out, do you know what I mean? And when he plays as well, he has got that kind of quiet aggression that you like. That said, with Moore, I'm sure he's got a few stories from the last couple of years. So very difficult. I'll go Morrison as well. I'll copy Sim.
I don't want to sound like Tim Tedder here, but I do like the fact that Michael Morrison owns a couple of barbershops. That's quite a nice quirk. And finally then, for the mailbag, Malta Royals Trust says, again, a bit of a light-hearted one, how to prepare for the town at trophy parade with social distancing. I'll turn this into a semi-serious question, Sim, but obviously the plans to get fans back into stadiums has been put on pause in the last week. It was due, I think, October the 1st, so it would have been in time for next weekend's game against Watford. But obviously the spike in cases has sort of pushed that back. You know, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. And of course, this is way, way, way in the future. But speaking hypothetically, and again, we can all dream, if Reading did win promotion this season, and I emphasise the if, would it make it less special if fans weren't there to enjoy it?
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest, I think getting promotion is that moment of getting promotion is the special bit. It's not being in the Premier League. It's not playing in the Premier League week in, week out. It's that brief period when you're absolutely on top of the world, when you've just clinched it. You know you are the best team in the competition that you're in. And everyone's buzzing, everyone's enjoying it. And we all think about those great memories from a couple of years ago in 11-12 or back in 05-06 when fans are celebrating, they're going wild, whether it's down in Southampton or that West Ham game or trophy parade or going onto the pitch for the Forest game when we went up. It's moments like that that you really live for in football. And I know on paper it's the same thing with getting promotion in a socially distanced way or whatever it is this season, but it just wouldn't quite be the same. Obviously I'd love it and I'd love Reading to do it, but it just doesn't have that same special flavour to it, does it?
Ben, it'd be absolute torture, wouldn't it? I mean, I think I was thinking this morning that, you know, the hype is incredible after the last three games, but do you think the hype would almost be even more if we'd been there to see it? Because obviously, you know, we're all watching these games at home on TV, but generally I think, you know, we might be even more excited if we'd seen this team in the flesh.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sim's sort of hit the nail on the head there. It is that little period where, you know, you are basically invincible as a football fan and everything you say is like gospel because your team's just won promotion. And I think it's that excitement of going to the games home and away and knowing that you're going to win. You know, one of my probably one of my best moments as a Reading fan was that Jason Roberts goal down at Southampton, which I'm pretty sure is still going, actually. That ball is still moving from his header. But, you know, that was just phenomenal that night. Absolutely phenomenal. And I think, you know, what you tweeted yesterday, Ollie, about the purple turtle, it's all that sort of stuff. You know, it becomes very local and very personal and very, you know, you become very proud of what's going on. I think the difficult thing now with thinking, I can't even believe we're talking about this, but, you know, the possible promotion that we could have next season or next May, it's going to be impossible to do that. You know, I think I'm personally resigned to the fact that we won't have fans in the stadium this season. I know that's quite sort of negative, but as a Reading fan, I've got to kind of bring it down a little bit. I think, you know, it is a shame that we're not going to be in the ground, certainly for the next 6 months or more, but, you know, the positive is that we get to watch the games on iFollow, and I think we're still part of that, and I think the players sort of understand that as well, and certainly Paunovic has kind of said all those things as well. So yeah, missing out is never a good thing. You know, I hate missing games, but it's the reality of where we're at the moment, and I think the longer they can keep winning games and keep doing well, it's just going to kind of make fans miss them even more, and I think compared to recent seasons when attendances have been dropping so drastically, that can only be a positive thing long term. We will have to see, but I don't anticipate anyone being in the stadiums for the rest of this season, definitely.
Well, I was about to say there's nothing wrong with ending the mailbag on a bit of positivity, but there is some realism for you. Yeah, I tend to agree. I tend to agree with you, really. I can't see, especially with, cases going up. I think you're probably looking at maybe February or March at the very earliest now, which is unfortunate because we did seem to be sort of heading in the right direction, not just in football, but, with the whole virus as a whole. Obviously, we had last weekend, a couple of tests, trials, across the EFL of sort of 1,000 fans in a handful of stadiums. But not for a couple of months, I don't think. Let's move on then to the goings on around Reading Football Club in the last week in News Bites.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
I've mentioned him already in the podcast, but Lewis Gibson's arrival on loan from Everton was confirmed in the last week. A bit on Lewis Gibson, 20 years old, only 11 senior appearances to his name so far in his career. They all came on loan at Fleetwood last season, whereby all accounts he played very, very well as they got to the playoffs. He's also an under-17 World Cup winner in that same team as Danny Loader and Phil Foden and the likes. You spoke about it last week a little bit, Sim, on the podcast. I won't delve too much on it, so I'll get Ben's opinion on Lewis Gibson. A needed addition, Ben, because there's a lot of talk about how, yes, he is clearly very highly rated, but we've spoken about it already. Centre-back seems to be a position where we are fairly well stocked.
I think there's no way they would have done that deal this week now with the injuries that they've got. So I can understand the logic behind kind of trying to stock up a little bit on centre-backs. They tend to get the brunt of the attacking force from opposition teams, really. But my kind of frustration was that then obviously the rumour was circulating that Tom McIntyre would go out on loan. And I just don't see the point. I don't know why we're bringing in sort of other clubs' younger players to kind of play them at the Championship level for the detriment of our own players. Tom McIntyre, for me personally, is a future Reading captain, so that doesn't make sense, really, to bring someone else in to kind of battle for him with, what are essentially the reserve centre-back positions. He looks like a good player, from what I've heard. He talks very, very well. He seemed very excited to be there, obviously said all the right things about us being a massive club and stuff. So, he can only be a positive to bring a player of that quality in, but I just don't see, the position we're in now that would have been done this week, if that makes sense. But you don't know whether or not Panovic will look to change a system or not, or try and play three at the back. I think if he decides to do that, then you would imagine Gibson or McIntyre to fill in with Morrison and Moore in that respect. But it's on paper, it seemed a strange one at the time for me, and it seems even stranger now, kind of heading into the final week of the transfer window, really.
Wonderful Geordie accent, Lewis Gibson, I have to say. He had a beaming smile on his face throughout that interview as well. Came across really, really well, and certainly seemed a lot older than 20 years old. Another deal that is still not done, Rodrigo Riquelme, seems to have been, incredibly close for the last couple of weeks now. Still in England, Riquelme, training every so often with Reading. But Veljko Panovic spoke about it in the press last week. So he said, all the circumstances of the time we're living in, obviously COVID and whatnot, means it is difficult to close down a deal for Riquelme. But he is still in Reading and we are looking at him. We had permission from Atletico to have him training for certain days, and now we are looking to extend that until we are close with them, or we find out if it's not possible. At this point, we are still working on it. It's obvious we are coming into the last week of the transfer window, so everyone has to know where we stand. We are looking forward to clarifying it very soon. So, saying a lot without saying very much at all there, Veljko Panovic. Very clever. Sim, as Panovic says, the window does shut in just over a week's time. Monday, October the 5th, is when the window shuts. What for you still needs to be done in the market?
Quite a lot, to be honest. It's hard to know just how far the signings will go depending on how ready Paolo thinks the younger players are. I mean, for example, I would think we need a left back to cover for Richard, given that there's no other senior left back here. But if Paolo really thinks Bristow or Samuels is ready to step up, then we might not need them. But otherwise, certainly a right back, definitely a holding midfielder. Because if Laurent or Rinamosa get injured, then we suddenly look very light indeed there, especially with Araruna injured as well. Backup target man for Zhao as well, because I would like to give Puskas a go up top. I do think he's a good option to try and develop and give him some more game time there, but we can't be relying on Puskas as a lone striker, just him, basically, considering how inconsistent he was last season. And we can't really allow ourselves to be in a position where we are just relying on Zhao. And then if he's not in there, then everything has to change, or we're gambling on Puskas. So certainly quite a few signings to come in, plus Riquelme as well, of course.
Well, there has been one addition on the coaching side of things in the last week. Marko Mitrovic's arrival has been confirmed. He worked with Panovic in both the Serbian youth setup and at Chicago Fire. So he joins the coaching staff. Also includes now Nuno Gomez, John O'Shea and Quinton Fortune. So very, very packed coaching staff at the moment. Still no official word on Eddie Niedzielski, but as far as we're concerned, he appears to be heading out of the club. But yeah, in the words of Tim Deller, nothing official yet. No game this week for the women's side. They next play on Sunday, October the 4th against West Ham in the WSL. The under-23s got their first win of the season on Friday night as they beat Aston Villa 2-1 away from home. Augustus McGiff and Oliver Pendlebury with the goals in that one. They play West Brom away next Friday. But the under-18s lost to Aston Villa 3-1. And they next play Leicester at home next Saturday. And finally, news emerging last night, according to the Scottish Sun, Mark McNulty has been arrested for suspected match fixing. So as many arrests as goals for Reading since joining the club 2 years ago for him. What that means for him, I'm not too sure, but obviously it's got to be proven first, I suppose. But obviously he wasn't really in Reading's plans anyway. Whether he ends up having his contract terminated, that might be the case. But not an ideal situation for either him or Reading to find themselves in as we head into the final week of the transfer window. Right then, let's look ahead to what I think is probably going to be our toughest test of the season so far as we welcome Watford next weekend.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Yes, Watford are the first of the relegated teams that we'll face this season. Definitely looking at their squad, they'll certainly have ambitions of going straight back up. I said it just then, Ben, but you know we spoke about how Cardiff last week was probably going to be the toughest test so far. We've got through that test. We've won that 1-2-1. But this is going to be even more difficult, and certainly, again, look, if we win this one, it doesn't mean we're going up. But if we get a result here, then certainly a lot of this optimism, we'll just keep on going and going.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why not. We're for once we're looking up. As I said earlier, the confidence is there. There's a bit of arrogance around the team now, which is a positive thing. The problem with Watford is that they will pose a very different challenge. They've still got a lot of players there that are. Were around the Premier League side that they had last year. You look at Saar, who I can't remember, was it Liverpool where he had an amazing game against them?
Yeah, it's got a hat-trick against Liverpool.
Yeah, and Tom Cleverley obviously is still there, who I personally don't rate, but he's got a lot of experience in that position. Craig Cathcart, Ben Foster. So, they've had, they've got 7 points. So, they've done all right at the start of the season. Obviously not as well as us because no one has. But, this is a really good test again, and you can only measure how good you are by playing these teams. Yesterday, I think, was the first real test that we've had. We've come through that flying colours, so why not go for it again on Saturday? I think it will be tight. I would definitely take a positive result in terms of a draw out of the game. But, yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how how the team cope with those kind of forward threats in particular. Yeah,
it's the battle of the Serbian coaches, Veljko Paunović against Vladimir Ivic. Sim, I have to say, just sort of looking through that squad, I think it was George Ellick from the not the top 20 podcast at the start of the season. He tweeted a picture of the Watford did their squad numbers, and he said, you know, this is quite frankly illegal for the Championship. Some of the quality in this Watford side, the likes of Gerard Deulofeu and Etienne Capoue are still at the club, but they've not been involved this season and sort of expected to leave in the next week or so. But even so, as Ben mentioned, Ben Foster's a fantastic goalkeeper. Chalobah and Cleverley both capped for England, I believe, and obviously both come from top clubs. Ismail Assar, as Ben mentioned, tore Liverpool a new one last season. And also some sort of exciting young new talent. João Pedro scored the winner for them against Luton yesterday. And Watford fans rave very, very highly about him. I think he's just 18 years old, but certainly looking at Watford's squad, Sim, you know, they could tear this league apart this season.
Yeah, on paper, it's a very good side. And certainly in terms of individual talent, they're very good. But to be honest, they were good enough to stay up last season as well. And I know it's really tempting to kind of look at a team on paper at the start of the season and say, they're gonna do really well. They're going to win the league, go up automatically, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's about the cohesion and the spirit and the organisation they have across the course of the season. And we've seen teams come down from the Premier League before and looked at them and thought, they're really good, they can go straight back up, but they've just not got to grips with the league properly. And I'm obviously kind of looking at this side and thinking, yeah, it's a really good side, but you can't really tell how well they're going to adapt to the Championship until we've got a few more weeks in or a few more months in and really kind of worked that out. So yes, it's worrying from our point of view that we're going up against a side that is good on paper, but I don't think that's really what gets you promoted in this league. It's about cohesion, it's about spirit, and really being able to perform to the best of your ability across the course of the season. And from our point of view, I know we've got some big injury worries potentially, depending on how long Arun is out and Chow's out, but you look at the spirit, you look at the belief that is inside at the minute, that's going to stand us in really good stead. Not to mention how well we've been defending recently and how well we've been scoring goals and set pieces recently as well, and put it together. And I think there's a good case to be optimistic about next week.
Yeah, I mean, I always go back to that Stoke side that came down from the Premier League a couple of years ago. And, you know, the quality they had in their squads was phenomenal. And sort of everyone was tipping them to win the league and to go straight back up. And as it happens, they've sort of struggled back in the Championship the last couple of years. As Ben said, 7 points from 9 games for Watford so far, but very low scoring affairs. A 1-0 win against Middlesbrough on the opening day, followed by a 0-0 draw with Sheffield Wednesday, and then a 1-0 win against their local rivals Luton yesterday. So clearly a very good defence to get 3 straight clean sheets. Obviously, as I say, Ben Foster's very good, and that centre-back pairing of Craig Cathcart and Christian Cabasele is for me certainly Premier League quality. Reading haven't, you know, had too much problem scoring goals so far this season. Ben, 2 goals in each of our league games, 3 against Colchester in the League Cup. Something's going to have to give, though, in this game if Watford's got a very good defence and we seem to be scoring goals quite easily. How tough is it going to be sort of to break that down, break that defence down, Ben?
I think, you know, we've talked about the injury to João to death really today. I think, you know, Puskas, when he came on yesterday, looked like he just wanted to score, which is fantastic because he's been outside for a little while. So I think he's definitely going to be up for the game if he plays. I think the biggest thing really is that with Watford, they've always got options. So, you know, looking at the bench yesterday, they had Deeney on the bench, who would get into any Championship side, probably some of the lower Premier League team as well. I see a scoring next weekend. I have a sneaky feeling that we'll do all right next week. I really do. I think, you know, Watford are still getting used to this league. What's incredible is that they still manage to churn out results, yet they change the manager every 6 months. A little bit like us, really, except the results part. But, you know, we will only know how good we are, you know, at sort of 5 o'clock next Saturday again, and you just keep taking the one game at a time. The positive really is that we've got a clean week ahead of us, so we can just get, you know, he can get the players out on the pitch and know this is how we're going to set up, this is how I want to do this. I think our defence is more than capable of coping with those players. My concern moving forward is that, you know, Sim said that these guys are good on paper, but they might decide that they hit their stride against us next week, and that's that really. I think there will be goals in this game. I know we're going to do predictions later on, but I definitely see goals in this game, and I'd be very surprised if we're able to keep a clean sheet next week, definitely.
Well, we are going to move on to predictions right now. You know, it's fascinating how three wins in a row can breed so much optimism. Looking at predictions for the Cardiff game, Handbags Harris was spot on with a 2-1 win for Reading. Sim, you also got a point for saying 2-0, scuppered by Lee Tomlin, who always seems to score against Reading. And then myself, Mark and Westy all went for a 1-1 draw. So, Sim, I'll come to you first on this one. What are you going for Reading against Watford?
Looks a lot like a 1-1 game to me. Think it's going to be a tight game. Think it's going to be a good game. But they're two sides with good defences, to be honest. And I don't see either side really kind of getting, well, more than two goals in this game. And I can see it being very tight at the back and perhaps decided by set-piece goals. And at the end, I can just see 1-1 for the way it turns out.
Ben, you said plenty of goals, 3-3, 5-4.
I think 2-2 in this game. I think that will be. I think that's what will happen. I think there will be goals in it. I don't think we'll have enough to win the game, but I definitely think we'll get something out of it. So 2-2 is what I'll go for. Stick my neck out.
Yeah, I'm very torn on this one. The pessimist in me says that because Lucas Jarre was likely to be out with no Swift, I almost want to say 1-0 Watford, but I don't know whether that's me being overly negative when I shouldn't be after three wins from three. But in an attempt to sort of gain some early points in the prediction league, I'm going to reluctantly say 1-0 to Watford. But there's a nice negative note to end this week's podcast on. Yeah, hopefully it doesn't go that way, but we should. We'll have to wait and see, as I say. We don't know what the team's going to be like yet. Hopefully we'll find out a bit more on the extent of the Zhao and the Araruna injuries in the next week. And we might even have Rodrigo Riquelme to help us out as well. But that wraps up episode 235 of the Tireless Den podcast. Sim, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And Ben, thank you very much for your time.
No problem at all, guys.
And thank you at home for listening as well. There we are then. Three wins from three in the Championship for Reading. As I said at the top of the show, the last time we started the season with three straight wins, we ended up winning 13 on the bounce. So hopefully we've got about 10 more weeks of dreaming to do. Come on, you Ars. Smile.